The Vintage Gamer, Episode 3, Cosmic Encounter. Hello, and welcome to the third episode of The Vintage Gamer, a podcast dedicated to seeking out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. I don't have too much to say in the order of announcements this week. I would like to thank anybody who put comments up on the website. All comments are, of course, appreciated and help the show become better. I think I am getting a little sense of what the format of the show is going to be like. If you'd like to know, I'll share it with you right now. It looks like what I'm going to do is 3 weeks of board/card games. Could include war games in there, too. And then I'm going to take a week off and cover something else. So, for example, next week, just a little preview, I'm probably going to talk about the Dark Castle game on the Macintosh. However, that fourth week could be anything from discussing, say, a large class of games like my Parker Brothers games idea, or it could be discussing themes of games, for example, discussing sort of mechanic that gets spread across a number of games. So I think that fourth podcast will probably be historical in nature. So with that, let's get to the game. As I mentioned, the game is Cosmic Encounter, which has both its fans, huge fans, and detractors. Those who don't like wacky random games probably don't like Cosmic Encounter. I'm going to cover it for the fans out there, and the detractors can, I guess, switch over to another podcast right now. However, I hope you'll keep listening, and maybe I'll convince you to be a fan. I first encountered Cosmic Encounter in the Games 100. It was one of those games that I looked at and thought, wow, I love the look of the components. I love the look of the warp piece that you use to indicate which planet you're attacking. And I love the general concept of a game where each player has a different power and the different interactions that causes within the game. I didn't actually get my hands on a copy of Cosmic Encounter until around 97. I was there at the Origins 97 convention. I was doing promotional stuff for another game. And I went to the Mayfair booth specifically to buy Cosmic Encounter. And the woman there said, well, this is our last copy of Cosmic Encounter. In fact, we don't even have a copy of the rules for this particular copy. So here it is. We will send you the rules in the mail. And good luck, basically. And they followed through. They did send me the rules. They actually sent me the rules to Simply Cosmic as well. And I've played it a few times since. Actually, I played it last week, and I'm surprised that we haven't played it more. I think we brought it out a few times around the late 90s, early aughts, whatever you call it. And I guess all the new games drove this one out, and we just said, oh, well, there's this new game, we have to play that. Yeah, we'll play Cosmic Encounter again some other time. And it just sat in the basement. Given the way the people reacted to the last session report, which I'll talk about a little bit later, I think we'll be bringing this one out a little more often than we have. So I've been talking a bit about Cosmic Encounter, assuming that you know what the game is and how it's played. What is the game and how is it played? The general concept is that each player is an alien, and you control a system of 5 planets, and on each planet you place 4 tokens that indicate your amount of control in that planet. Your goal is to take over planets in other solar systems, basically to move your tokens onto 5 different planets that belong to other people. If you do that, then you win the game. So setup is pretty simple. There's a central hex, which is also called the warp. And then around that, you place other hexes. These are large hex boards, not the small hexes you see in war games, on which are drawn the 5 planets that represent your solar system, and you place your tokens onto those 5 planets. You also get dealt out a starting hand of 7 cards, and I'll explain what those are. And finally, you are assigned an alien power, and those are dealt out randomly as well. Gameplay is pretty simple. On your turn, you can perform 1 or 2 challenges. The challenge consists of 8 steps. You get to perform a second challenge if you succeed at your first challenge. In the first step, you retrieve a token from the warp. Now, the warp is that central hex area I mentioned, and that is where the dead tokens go. So if you make a challenge and you fail, any tokens that you've thrown in support of that challenge go into the warp. So the first thing you get to do during a challenge is to take a token out of the warp and place it on one of the planets where you already have control. And that includes your planets. It also includes your opponent's planets, if you have any tokens on those planets. The second thing you do is you draw a card from the Destiny pile. This tells you which planetary system and which person you're allowed to attack. So, for example, if you're purple and you draw a green card, then you have to attack green. And you have to attack green in green's system, not in your own and not in anybody else's system. There are a few exceptions. If you draw a rainbow-colored card, then you can attack anybody you want. And if you draw your own color, then you have two choices. Either you draw a new Destiny card, which will have you attack, presumably somebody else, or you can try and drive out a player in your own system. So, for example, if someone has control over four planets, this might be a reasonable approach. You try to drive them out of the planet in your system, therefore they're knocked down to three planets. The third step is to actually pick up the warp cone, which is a little difficult to describe, but think of it as a cone which has two oval shapes, one at the end of the cone where you'd normally expect an oval shape, and the other at closer to the pointy end. One oval represents the support for the attacker, and the other represents the support for the defender. The attacker will pick up the cone and place it pointing at the planet that he wants to attack. The next step is very important. The challenger, I've been calling him the attacker, but actually the correct term is the challenger, then grabs a number of tokens out of his planets, not out of the warp, and places them onto the cone. The defender does not get to place any tokens in. The defender uses the tokens that are already there on the planet that is being challenged. These tokens have two effects. First of all, they add support to the challenge. Secondly, if you succeed in the challenge, you get to move those tokens onto your opponent's planet, thereby getting some control of that planet. If you don't place any tokens on the cone, then you don't get any control, even if you succeed. And I'll just give a little preview of the session report and say that this happened a couple of times during our game. The fourth and fifth steps are basically the same. First of all, the challenger goes and asks everybody if they want to ally with him. And then the defender does the same thing. Now, either the challenge or the defender can shut out players. For example, they might say, "I'd like to invite red and blue, but not green." Because suppose green is about to win, you don't want to include them because allies, as I'll explain in a moment, do get some benefits from trying to help out the player. For example, if the challenger succeeds, allies get to add their tokens to the planet. So by participating in the challenge, you get to increase your influence on this one planet, therefore increasing your chance to win the game. If the defender succeeds, then the allies get a card, or they get a token back from the warp, and they get one each of those for each token that they've placed in defense. So, helping out with these challenges does have its benefits. Now, it has its drawbacks as well. If the challenge fails, or if the defense fails, and you've placed some tokens in support, those tokens go into the warp and are lost, until you retrieve them at the beginning of your challenge, or by defending another challenge. In step 6, the other players, now the two players, the challenger and the defender, are called the main players, so the other players, the non-main players, actually go around and decide whether they're going to ally with the challenger or the defender, and throw in their tokens in support of either one. If you're allying with the challenger, then you place your tokens on the part of the cone, on the end of the cone with the challenger. If you're allying with the defender, then you place tokens on the end of the cone with the defender. And this goes in clockwise order, starting with the left of the challenger. Once the non-main players have decided which person they're going to ally with, or whether they're going to ally with anyone at all, then the two main players place down one challenge card, and these cards are placed face down. Challenge cards consist of either numbers or what's called a compromise card, which I'll explain in a minute. Once both players have placed their cards face down, they reveal them simultaneously, and the player with the highest total of tokens and the value of the challenge card wins the challenge. So when summing up the values for the challenge, the attacker will add their tokens in support on the cone, plus their allies, plus the value on the challenge card. The defender will add his tokens on the planet that is being challenged, plus any allies' tokens, plus the value on the defender's challenge card. If you are the challenger, you get to remove the defender's tokens from the planet and replace them with your own and any of the allies. If you're the defender, then you get to remove the challenger and any ally tokens from the cone and place them into the warp. And as I mentioned, any defender's allies get extra cards or get to remove tokens from the warp equal to the amount of support that they put in. Now, as I mentioned, there are other challenge cards besides the number cards that you can play, and they're called compromise cards. Compromise cards sort of simulate the prisoner's dilemma. Yes, you can both put down numbered cards and try to go head-to-head against each other. Or you can both put down compromise cards, in which case you can both make a deal. You can trade tokens, you can trade cards, but you have 1 minute to make a compromise. Now, if one player plays a numbered card and another player plays a compromise, then the player who played the numbered card wins. There is one benefit to compromising when your opponent does not want to, and that is you get cards. You get to take a number of cards from your opponent's hand equal to the number of tokens that you put in for support. Now note that this benefit does not apply to your allies. Your allies get screwed. What you could do, if you really wanted to be mean, is say, "All right, look, let's make a compromise on this deal. Do you have a compromise card? I have a compromise card. Let's make a compromise. We'll set up a trade. We'll put these down, and we'll work it out once the cards are revealed." And then you place the numbered card with the assumption that they're going to play the compromise card. And yes, that would be quite mean, but also in the spirit of the game. Another important part about the compromise is that your allies get nothing. Now, they don't get screwed, they don't get sent to the warp, but they just get sent back to their home planets. But, on the other hand, they aren't allowed to be included as part of that deal. Now, there are two other points I want to make about the challenges before I move on. The first point is, if you can't initiate a challenge on your turn, or defend yourself from a challenge, because you just don't have any challenge cards in your hand, in this case, you play any cards in your hand that you wish to play, and there are other cards which I'll discuss in a minute that you can play, discard the rest of your cards, and then draw back up to 7. And the other point is that I wanted to reiterate that if you succeed at that first challenge, then you get to do another one, and that starts right again from the beginning, which is removing a token from the warp and placing it on one of your planets. So that's the basic game. And if that's what the game was all about, I don't think it would be quite as popular as it is. The big reason people like the game is all the modifications to that basic system. And the first and most basic modification is all the alien powers. As I mentioned at the beginning, each person is assigned randomly an alien power. And these powers change the rules of the game in one specific way, for you. So let me give some examples of some alien powers. One is called Will. If your alien is Will, you can choose any player to target. You don't have to listen to the Destiny card. You still have to turn it over, but you can pretty much do whatever you want. Another alien race is Kronos, and Kronos has the power of time travel. And you get to replay challenges. Basically, each player puts down their card, you reveal them, and Kronos can use his power, say, "Okay, you've played that card, now set it aside, I'm going to put my card back into my hand, and now we're going to do it all over again." So basically, the opponent of Kronos can't play the same card again. Third power is Laser. Laser has the power of blindness. If you're involved in a challenge with Laser, you pull your challenge cards out of your hand, and Laser will draw one of them at random. And believe me, it's really annoying. And there are many, many, many alien powers out there. The original Eon set had, it's 20 or 25 powers. With the expansions, you can have up to 75 powers available. The Mayfair set, there were originally 48 powers, and with the expansion, they added 54 additional powers, which gives you 102 possibilities. Now, this is where some of the complaints about Cosmic Encounter come in, because of all of the randomness. Obviously, you can't plan, you don't know what powers you're going to have, but that's part of the fun of Cosmic Encounter. You don't know what kind of game you're going to play every time. It's going to be different every single time. Another modification to this basic system are the Edicts. The Edicts are cards that are mixed in with the deck of challenge cards, and these are cards that you can play to modify what's going on. Now, these can be played by any player, even if the player isn't currently involved in the challenge, and they can be played at a specified time. So, for example, some edicts can be played at the beginning of the challenge phase. Some edicts can be played during a challenge. Some edicts can be played, well, anytime. So, for example, Cosmic Zap, very useful card. It can stop use of a power. So, for example, you're in a combat with Kronos, and Kronos tried to turn back time. You could play Cosmic Zap, which would stop them. Now, Kronos could respond in turn with an edict called Edict Zap, which stops edict use. So he basically shut down the edict that you just played. Another example is Mobius Tubes. This one frees all the tokens from the warp, which can completely change the dynamic of the game. Another fun one is Time Gash, which allows you to make a challenge anywhere, even if it interrupts the current challenge. So you would play Time Gash, you'd start a new challenge with the player who played Time Gash as the challenger, you would complete that challenge, and then you would go back to the original challenge. So what I've described up to now is, I believe, everything that was included in the original version of Cosmic Encounter. After that, even more modifications were made. Now, one of the earliest things that was added to that original game were the flares. And flares are temporary alien powers. Basically, it's another card that goes into the challenge edict, now flare deck, and you play them, they'll give you a power in addition to the power that you already have. Now, in the Aeon case, they go back in your hand, so the powers are not terribly powerful. In the Mayfair case, they decided to change it, and you play it once, so the powers that were available became more powerful. I only have the Mayfair version, so I think in Mayfair they added an additional thing where if the power matches the power that you already have, then you get this kind of super additional power. So you get a very powerful result. But again, you can only play it once. I believe there was a planned expansion for Mayfair where they were going to allow some flares that weren't quite as powerful as the original flares, at least the original Mayfair flares, but that expansion never panned out. Another thing that was added, that was now included in the original Mayfair version, is the Reverse Cone. And in this case, some new cards are added to the Destiny deck, or I guess cards are modified in the Destiny deck. And if you draw one that has a black cone on it, then some of the results are reversed. What happens is the allies get reversed rewards. Challenger allies get cards or tokens if the challenger succeeds, and defender allies get tokens onto the planet. And then there are some other expansions I'm not quite as familiar with, as I only have the base Mayfair version. One is Lucre, so instead of just taking a token out of the warp, you actually have to spend Lucre to get a token out of the warp. Although, you can get more than one out. You can get other things, like you can spend Lucre to put more tokens in to support a challenge, even though you're already in the challenge. And my understanding about the Lucre is that it tends to balance the game a little bit and make it drag on much longer than it normally would, because you've got another resource that you can use to just keep yourself going. And the other are moons. And moons are additional things that you can place into your planetary system. So they're round cards, and you place two of them face down in your planetary system. The player who controls that system can look at the cards, but no one else can. So if you draw a card that says to attack a particular planetary system, instead of attacking the planets, which have the tokens on them, you can attack the moons instead. And if you succeed in a challenge, and you are still challenging the person who controls that system, you get to turn it over and see what the moon says, and possibly apply the effects immediately. And I understand that certain moons are better than others. Some moons imbalance the game. So, as I think I mentioned, there are a number of versions of this game. The first is the original Aeon version, and it was originally for 4 players, and there were no flares, and no reverse cone, no lucre, no moons. And on top of that, they had 9 expansions. 9 expansions added support for more players, added support for more powers. I think there were, like I said, I think there were originally 20 powers, and they got up to 75 powers, and added the lucre, moons, flares, and all that. Well, then Mayfair came out with a version in the late 90s, and that consisted of 2 boxes of stuff. The first was just Cosmic Encounter, and that came with 48 powers and supported 6 players. And they had one expansion, which was more Cosmic Encounter, which added an additional 54 players and added the lucre and the moons. And more Cosmic Encounter says it supports 2 to 8 players, but I don't think it actually comes with 2 additional hexes, so I'm not exactly sure how it supports more players. And finally, there's the Avalon Hill version, which goes back to the original EN version that came out. That only supports 4 players with 20 powers, and there are no expansions available for that, and no flares, and no moons, and none of the other stuff. Oh, and I actually did forget, there was another version which came out from Mayfair called Simply Cosmic, which again is a 4-player game, and I guess you can think of as another return to the original, with just 4 players and not much chrome on top of that. Now those are all of the printed versions of the game. There's actually an online version of Cosmic Encounter, and of course I'll have a link to that in the show notes. You can play the game online, and you can play for free, or you can play a monthly subscription. If you play for free, you only get to choose from one of 6 alien powers. If you actually pay, then you can choose from, I think it's 32 powers. They list 31, but when I went and counted, there were 32, and it looks like there are 2 more planned. Now, there are a few changes with this version. There are only 4 planets per system. I'm not sure if that was chosen because of game design, or, as I suspect, because of screen real estate. But it's run by one of the original designers of the game, and I think it's pretty close to the original version. So, of course, the big question comes up, which version would I recommend? Well, if you want to be a traditionalist, obviously you want to go with the AN version. Of course, that means you have to buy the original set and all 9 expansions for it, which could become a little expensive. Now, there are a lot of people who like the Mayfair version, which, of course, is out of print now, and so you'd have to buy the original game and buy more Cosmic Encounter along with that, which could also become rather expensive. I think I've seen both sets together selling for $100 on eBay. Or you could go buy the Avalon Hill version, which I think you can still buy for about $30, and you can print out sheets for that and make modifications yourself. Cosmic Encounter really is a game about making modifications. The designers have encouraged people to create their own alien races, try them out. I mean, there is no way of tuning this game. When you have millions of possible combinations of aliens, you can't tune the alien powers. So, if you go into the game with that mindset, sure, go play with it. Create whatever rules you want. This is a very customizable game. If you want, you can create your own flares, you can create your own edicts. Try it out. It's a game that you can just play with. Now, in my gaming group, we haven't played it all that much. Like I mentioned, we tried it back, and I guess it was 2000, maybe it was 99, I'm not sure. We played it a few times then and just got pushed off the table by newer games. We tried it last week, or maybe it was the week before, and it's like coming home again. We loved it. We're going to play this game a lot, I think, in the next few months. The time we played, it was kind of interesting. We had 2 players who had played it before. Early on, we both got in big trouble. We had huge amounts of tokens in the warp. We had very little support on our own planets. And I think I had a token. I was one of the players. I had 1 token on another planetary system, and that was about it. The other guy had no tokens on any other systems. He basically had his own systems. I think 2 of his systems were taken over. So the game at that point became the game between 3 other players, which, of course, set up situations where he and I tried to help each other. At one point, I offered him a compromise, which he couldn't take up because he didn't have a compromise card. But later in the game, he actually took me up on that by playing an edict, which allows him to change an attack card, or rather attack result, into a compromise. So that worked out pretty well. I guess one player kind of felt bad for this guy, so she played a card that freed a number of his tokens from the warp. And then, I'm not really sure why, but she thought, hey, what the heck, and played another card which freed all the tokens from the warp, which basically reset the game. So then we were all back in it again. And that's where the randomness of the game comes in. Now, obviously, if you're trying to win the game, you're probably not going to play that card, but hey, it's all in fun, right? Another thing that happened, and this happened a few times, actually, it's a case of just not quite getting the game, I suppose, is that people kept forgetting to put tokens down on the warp cone when they were doing a challenge. And as I said, this happened a couple times. This is why I'm trying to make a point that if you really want to move tokens onto your enemy's planet, you need to put tokens onto that warp cone. Now, I'm embarrassed to say that I was one of the players that did this, but in my circumstance, it didn't matter so much because I knew I was going to lose the challenge. So there really wasn't any point for me to put tokens down. And that brings up a strategy element here. If you're trying to bluff players into helping you, you might say, okay, I'm going to grab a large number of tokens and put them down and say, I believe that my challenge is going to succeed. I'm going to move a large number of tokens from my planetary systems into this other person's planet. And who's with me? Who's going to help me out here? I'm going to win. You're going to get to ride on my coattails and move your tokens into that planet. And by doing that, you might actually convince a number of players to help you out to boost your score up high enough to win the challenge. Whereas if you come in and say, well, I don't think I'm going to win this. So you put down one token. You don't really try to boost people up and try to win. And so people don't ally with you, and so you lose, maybe narrowly. So that's where the psychological part of this game comes in. It is a fairly random game. I mean, obviously you don't know what powers you're going to get, and certain powers might have more strengths than others. But there is a certain part of hand management, I mean the card hand management here, and of trying to manipulate the other players. So, let me give you another example. Suppose you have a challenge, and you know you have absolutely no chance of winning the challenge. And you have a power that allows you to rescue your tokens from the warp, or you have a card that allows that. Then, you can try and draw in the other players into your challenge. Say, look, hey, I'm going to win this thing. You put your tokens in, you say, okay, we're going to win this. We're going to, come on, people, join me with this. We're going to take over this planet. So you're pretty close to winning. Come on, join me. It's going to be pretty good. Obviously, do it a little smoother than that. And then you deliberately lose the challenge. Their tokens go into warp. You rescue your tokens out of the warp. And you go on. And I like this aspect of the game. I used to play a lot of diplomacy. And I stopped doing it because of two reasons. One is that I didn't like the long playing times of it. And I didn't like the fact that I had to turn into this master manipulator for that long period of time. But a game like this, it doesn't last too long, probably a couple hours or so. And I don't have to be a master manipulator to win the game necessarily, but I can have a few times when I try to manipulate people and have fun with it. I'm sure that my friends don't appreciate knowing that I'm going to try to manipulate them, but hey, it's part of the game. And I think that about wraps it up for Cosmic Encounter. Like I said, next week I will be talking about Dark Castle. I think I'll be talking about Dark Castle. I might pick a different... It's definitely going to be one of those games that took over my college back in the day. And after that, I've got a few games that I picked up off of eBay. Might talk about those. Might talk about some of the other ones in my collection. So that will about wrap it up for today. The Vintage Gamer is a podcast produced weekly and available for direct download or via RSS at www.thevintagegamer.net. The music for The Vintage Gamer is provided by Magnatune.com and is available on their album Music of the Spheres. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. You can contact me via email at vintagejim@gmail.com or via Skype. My username there is JV Square. Thank you for listening.